You want what?
What do you want, Niranjan?
I will only give you guidelines of things like what were the three guidelines I gave you last time? Conceptual change and it must constitute some kind of advancement in science. And also you have to discuss whether there is advancement and in what ways there is, you think is the advancement. So these are the three things that you have to, so keep those things in mind. So where will you look for them? You will, when you are looking for them, you can look at it from the point of view of when you are searching for it. You should search for things like, you know, the ideas that change the world, the great experiments, of course the great names that you always remember. So take any subject, there are always some names that you always remember. So based on that you can always choose and make a list of them. And then, you know, all of you can sit one evening and decide and let me know. Okay, so today we will also see, we will try to apply these three conditions to an episode that we are going to discuss today. We will be discussing two episodes if time permits. So one of the episodes is to do with the chemical revolution. So we briefly touched on chemical revolution, but we haven't discussed it in terms of the entire episode, like exactly what were the issues that were debated, why there was a change, what were the changes, and how it led to a revolution. And what were the experiments? And we will also come to attend to this issue of if there is any advancement, what does that advancement consist in? So, you possibly have this idea about a discipline called alchemy. Okay. So, alchemy actually means what? Alchemy actually means chemistry. Because al is basically the article, the definite article. Because in Arab, al means article, the definite article, the. So the chemistry. So what it essentially means is, it's chemistry. So alchemy. But then today, when we mention alchemy, we don't mean the chemistry. So, because the English speaking and the other non-Arabic speaking people look at alchemy as a word and not as in its actual meaning. So, when we mean chemistry, we don't mean alchemy. So the difference, there is a difference between what we call chemistry today and what was alchemy at that time. So what were they doing? There was alchemy in India, there was alchemy in Arabia, there was alchemy all over the world. So alchemy was almost a very old art of working with materials. For example, making acids, you know, making bases, extracting and separating substances from one to the other. And one of the most important activity of almost all the activists was to deal with metals. Okay, so our story starts with metals. So why metals? Because all of you know that some of the metals were considered very, very precious and they have very interesting properties. So when they started So how does it all begin? I mean, in the sense that why metals? Can you tell me why metals? Do you get metals directly in nature?
No.
Then why metals? So what do you think chemists would have done most of the time?
Heating.
Yes, somebody said.
Heating.
Heating, yes. Heating is one of the things that they normally do. So that's something like a simple thing that they could do, is to transform. That is to transform the substance from one to the other. Only one art that they know is to heat it. So give anything to a chemist. So he tries to convert one substance to the other by heating it. Why are you laughing? No, tell me. I mean, there is a possibility that, you know, see, interesting thing is, you know, I'm not saying laughing is bad, I'm saying laughing is good, because you must have seen some interesting thing out there. Did you see anything interesting in this? Huh? Nothing? Nothing interesting. So it's like this, you know, there is a famous saying, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So give somebody a hammer, so he'll try to bang everywhere, you know. So something like this. So for an alchemist, give him any substance, the first thing that he will do is heat. Why? He has a furnace. He knows how to manage heat. He produces fire, he works with it. So you go to any alchemist lab, the first thing that you would see is you see a lot of chimneys, lot of furnaces, lot of like lamps which will produce heat, and lot of bowls. And even in that place, you will also of course see that this heating will be done not only to liquids, also to solids. So one of the things that they would possibly do is get, for example, a stone as big as a stone and heat it. I mean, I really don't know what is laughing matter about it. If you want to be a scientist, you have to behave like that. Because what is the underlying idea? To transform substances. So alchemists is all about changing the nature of the substance. It was possible. Why? Because the basic elements are earth, water, fire, and so on. You know, air. I mean, those things they cannot be able to change. But what they can change is within the earth there are several substances, and it's possible to change from one to the other. So that was possible, and therefore the focus in today's talk thing is on metals. Because like metal is the hero of the episode. So what do you think will happen if you bring in a stone and start heating it? Of course, when you heat, one of the important things that you would possibly do is you won't heat the entire big stone. You would take a hammer, this time you will not look for nails, you will start breaking it and break it into small pieces, and then what you do, you will put it in a big container and start heating it. So that's what they did. So what do you expect from that? Yeah, it will possibly start breaking, of course. Then what do you normally expect?
Gas.
So some gas will come.
It will become red.
So essentially, this has been the engagement of people from time immemorial. Not necessarily just before the scientific revolution or anything like that. Right from the beginning, people have done this kind of experiments in India, abroad, Arabia, Greek, China, on almost all cultures, there has been a great tradition of working with these things. And then what they separated are different kinds of metals from that kind of process of heating. And of course, they already came to know, because you know, these people have only one thing to do, is get different kinds of metals, different kinds of rocks. Okay, the rock that looked black, the rock that looked red, the rock that looked sandy, you know, the rock that looked different. So they had a very good classification of different kinds of stones. They also know what kind of stone is available in which part of the earth, because they have surveyed all the land very nicely, and they know like this earth is good for this. So they managed to find out, for example, what kind of a place you would get gold from, what kind of a place you will get lead from, what kind of place you will get iron from, copper, and so on and so forth. So they managed to separate out many of these things, in some of them in very pure form. And you have some idea about how old these people must have been doing this? At least we know that the story from the Eureka, all of you know the story of the Eureka, right? So at least we know that gold was available at that time. Silver was also available at that time, because they were already mixing both silver and gold, and they were already knowing, you know, making these metals and all that. So from that you get an idea that it is certainly very old. So several years before Christ, that is BC, several centuries before BC, people already knew the art of working with metals. So metals have been extracted, people use them for various crafts, to make things for the household, and so on and so forth. And particularly, of course, all of you know that after the Stone Age comes the Metal Age, Iron Age as you call it. So the Iron Age essentially doesn't mean only the iron, I mean there may be, it means basically the Metal Age, in the sense that because during the Stone Age, and one of the things that enabled from stone to Metal Age, the fire. So it's only after human beings started harnessing fire, managing to control it, managing to keep it for long, or managing to produce whenever they want it. So when they started understanding this whole thing, that they started getting into the Iron Age. So that's why you can actually very simply, very clearly see the causal relationship between fire and metal being part of our life. So first comes fire and then comes metals. So if you will not get, for example, any possibility of a metallic age without a human being having already harnessed fire very well. And that's why one of the most important weapon of alchemists was fire. So they're handling fire, and they of course keep on separating all the substances into different things. They also started naming them. For example, from the ores they also get things like sulfur, okay, mica, mercury, all kinds of metals that we already mentioned. And sometimes they also get in the process acids, salts. So they kept on separating them with various combinations. They used to work with solutions, they to isolate them. So they knew hydrochloric acid, they know hydrosulfuric acid. So most of these common acids that we already know have been, you know, already separated and used for various purposes. So in that kind of a setting, they also already have managed to even make glass by heating what?
Sand.
So they managed to get the liquid sand, so to speak, by heating, and then blow it in whichever shape you want. So blowing, because it solidified very fast, so therefore they wanted to use so they used you know, creating kind of different kinds of things. And I think all of you possibly know that this is one culture that exists in almost all civilizations, and that is to create different kinds of glass beads. So bead making is one of the well known arts almost in every civilization, and because of ornamental purpose and things like that. So alchemists, you know, were therefore very important part of most cultures, participating in creating wealth and also differentiating from various kind of ornaments that people wore. And also, if you wanted to create a weapon, the most common weapon that you have is, well, it is a bow and arrow. Then the bow should have a metallic tip, right? So therefore you already know, therefore, that even at the time of Ramayana and Mahabharata, you are already in the metallic age, and they wore metallic caps, and the knife or the gada, whatever you think of, you know, everything was made of metals. So metal was used, like, you know, as I said, it's almost like metal is the sign of wealth in those days. How much metal you have? And did it change today? Even today it has not changed. Why? Because how many notes you can mint depends on how much of gold you have, how much of gold the country has. So even today, metal is like the beginning of who is wealthy, because metal is a tangible wealth. So like the rupee notes that you have are promissory notes, they have nothing, no value. It's just that the Reserve Bank has a store of gold, and then it just promises to the equivalent amount that, you know, if anybody exchanges to this, this will be amount to that. So that's already well known. I think you must have studied all that in your economics and other subjects. Anyway, so the point here that I am trying to say is that so metal becomes a very important part of human civilization. And the ability, of course, that you need to have is fire. And then in the process you started heating them, you started separating them into different kinds of substances. So this engagement continued. This engagement continued even at the time of Newton, even at the time of Boyle, because all of them were in their laboratories working with this. So there was this famous chemist, a French chemist called Priestley. So today's story we're going to do, of course we're neglecting so many things, because before that so many things happened. We might passingly mention a few of them during the course of today's talk. So what was Priestley's point? I mean, the kind of experiment that he did was, mercury. Now mercury has an interesting character in the sense that it's usually always available in a very pure form, because once you extract it, you know, you can store it separately without mixing it with several other things, and it doesn't mix with other liquids easily, and so it's very difficult. And besides, of course, that, I mean, it's so glittering, and it sort of has very funny property of, you know, becoming into a kind of a ball kind of a shape, and it sort of aggregates nicely into small pieces. So it was like a play, it was like a toy for even the scientists, and they were used to it. And mercury in very small components was also used in drugs all over the world, whether it's Ayurvedic drugs or in other Arabic drugs, everywhere. So people have always mixed it with substances in various ways. So how did they do that? I mean, usually one of the first things that they would of course do is, mercury has a very interesting property, and that is, as I already told you, it is like the if you have fire, what you would do, you would heat. So you would heat mercury as well. Mercury itself was obtained by heating in the first place, and secondly, now that you have some mercury, what you would do, you would put it in a bowl, okay, and then start heating. And as you could see that mercury, when you put it in a bowl, it doesn't have the opposite shape, but it will have the other kinds of shape, because there is no water adhesion, because of the absence of at least adhesion, you may want to say. So you start heating it. What happens now if you heat it? It expands, and then it will what? So, okay, so interesting. So after you expand, what will happen? It will become like this. Anyway, see, you are heating it not just with a candle. I mean, you are basically heating it in a furnace, okay, at a very high temperatures. And one of the things that happens is, you know, it doesn't actually become vapor. What happens is, it produces a substance called cats. Essentially, what is cats? We don't know, because we're going to do that in the. So, what is a cats? A cats is a black substance. So that mercury becomes black. It doesn't glitter anymore, and it becomes powder. That is what is called basma in Ayurveda. You know, you put basma in so many Ayurvedic substances. That's the basma. So that's what is the calx. So calx is what? It's like ash. So it is, ash is what you get after you burn everything and you know what is left out. So it's almost like that. So this is the kind of substance that you get. Now what Priestley found out is that, suppose if it is, let us say, some units, let's say it's 20 pins, whatever units, because I think they used pins as the units at that time. You may want to call it, let's say, 20 grams of the mercury was taken, let us say, and then you heat it. He found out that after the calx was obtained, can you guess? The cat's weight would be how much? Same or more or less? There are three answers possible. More, less or same? It will be the same? Pardon? Okay, so? I already told you that there no vapor is produced. So that much I clarified. So what will happen?
Yes,
it is more. So this is like the situation then. So this is like the catch that you get is more than 20. So I mean, it may not be so high. It may be 21 or even 20 point something, but they were able to manage to see that there is always an increase in the weight. And this was reported by Priestley. So Priestley reports it. Then what did he do? He worked with fire, and nothing else changed. In fact, he took meticulous weight of the substance in which he measured. That is, before he made the calx, and after he made the calx, he took the weight of the bowl also, which didn't change. Therefore, he thought that there is no substance from the bowl is getting attached to the calx. So that much he confirmed. So as you can see, we are already in the experimental era. Okay, so that means it is all done post-Newtonian times. See, it's after the physics revolution has already happened. Okay, the chemical revolution didn't happen till that point. It is sometime 1800 something. So Priestley was doing his experiments at that time. Exact years you can find out from the books or from the web, wherever you do the research. Now, this particular substance now is found to be larger, and it is known that it is not coming from here. So where should it come from? That's one possibility. The other possibility could be that it might have come from fire. So he had two possibilities. Because even till that point, we don't know the nature of fire. Because the nature of fire doesn't get settled during the chemical revolution. In fact, even after Lavoisier, fire remains a mystery. I mean, they were still having an idea about calorie and you know, the various kinds of notions, kind of things. And then, so what is this? There are two possibilities here. One is fire and air. Whichever it is, whether it is fire or air, mercury came from where? Earth. Earth is an element, fire is an element, air is an element. Alright, therefore, what do you think? And mercury is obtained after applying this, because mercury itself was separated from earth. So therefore, there was a common belief that all metals are compounds. Whatever the metal is, whether it's mercury, whether it is iron, whether it is gold, whether it is silver, all metals were taken to be compounds.
So central that Memo Indian is through this program or care and fire out anyway. So this plan was after
No, Priestley was before Leverage. Priestley was right, when was Levasseur? I mean, Levasseur and Priestley were contemporaries. Okay, they were doing experiments both at the same time. Okay, so they thought all of them are complexes. And then they had this problem. If this is a complex, if Mercury is a complex, what would calx be? Either it should be a complex or it should be simple. Now if it is simple, how could it be that its weight is more? Now you see the problem? So there is a problem here in understanding, that is, if calx is an element, or it's a simple one, it's a simple substance, then it should be more. So it is becoming more earthly, actually speaking. Therefore, it must be becoming more like an element. So that's what Priestley's ideas were. Something like, what happens is Mercury was obtained originally from the Earth. After again heating, it is again becoming more earthly. Therefore, it is becoming like a substance. Then he has to give an explanation about why the calx is weighing more than the original weight. So for that, he gave an explanation. He used a concept. Of course, he is not the first person to use this word. There was this idea called phlogiston. So what is a phlogiston? Phlogiston is a kind of a substance which substances like sulfur will have. And what is the character of phlogiston? Is that the phlogiston will be in the air. Okay, phlogiston will be in the air. And it will be used. It will be used when you heat substances. So mercury was obtained, for example, by a kind of a process wherein there is phlogiston and mercury together. That is, there is some kind, so there is one substance, some metal, and then there is a phlogiston, and then when they get together, you get a metal. Now, why its weight is less than its oxides? Because calx is an oxide. Of course, today we call it oxide. They don't call it oxides at that time. Why its weight is more than that? He explained that phlogiston has negative weight. So Priestley proposed that phlogiston has negative weight. That means there are elements which have negative weight at that time. Is it really difficult for them to believe these things? Negative weight is not so difficult for them to believe. Why? Because there are substances which are lighter, there are substances which are heavier. So what they would think then would be that suppose if a substance is dephlogisticated, it will become heavier. And that is what they thought was happening here. So that was Priestley's explanation. He said that this process, when mercury was heated to calx, it got dephlogistication. So this is called that's what happened to mercury. It got dephlogisticated. And because of which there is addition of the weight. And there is another interesting property about the calx. What is it? You can heat calx again, as we do with heat all the time. So heat calx again. Then what do you do? Of course, calx would not appear like this, because in the end, what you get is basically the powder, the hump of powder. So. And this you can again heat. You can heat this again. So Priestley has already done this job himself to prove his argument. When he heats it, you get this again. You get the vacuum back. That means essentially this is a reversible reaction. So by just applying heat again, what you would do is this carax will revert back to mercury. So that is one. It doesn't happen with all metals. It's not so easy to get the pure form of the metal just by heating it. But in the case of mercury, you have that kind of property. So in mercury, you can always do this. So you heat it again, you get back the mercury. And then he found out, he has also used the balance in his lab. Balance was very widely used in alchemist labs, because they always used to measure volumes of liquids, as well as measure the weight, take the weights of the substances before and after the experiments. So they were used, and then they managed to confirm this whole thing. So this was the kind of thing. And then he proved that in this process, now what is happening then? From the air, phlogiston gets added because of the heat, and then it becomes mercury. So this is dephlogisticated, and when you phlogisticate it, so then he proposed that metals essentially are phlogisticated substances. So when you phlogisticate earthy substances, you get metals. So this was the Priestley's proposal. And then comes Lavoisier. And Lavoisier also used the same kind of experiments, almost very similar to this.
So, when we can say that it is phlogisticated and dephlogisticated? Because in both cases we are getting metals.
You are getting what?
In both cases, we are having mercury and carax. Both cases we are heating.
Yeah, heating.
Then in one process we are getting that it is
phlogisticated, other
it is deep.
Mm-hmm.
Why
is it? No, see, that is because of the change in the weight.
This we are explaining on the process of that one. That is, it is
dephlogisticated
and it is
phlogisticated. Right. Mm-hmm. No, see, I'll tell you more story about it a little later. So exactly what is happening here is, just to clear your doubt, why it is dephlogisticated, because when mercury is becoming calx, it is dephlogisticated, and that's actually the reason why it is, its weight is more. Why? Because phlogiston is supposed to have negative weight. That's the reason. So now what is happening, if you are heating it again, what you are doing is you are combining calx with phlogiston such that you get back the mercury. Is that clear? Okay, so now what, there is another part of the story to the thing. Just before we go to Lavoisier, we will also make a very important point of the story, which is, he also extracted what? The dephlogisticated air. The dephlogisticated air was collected. And he called it actually dephlogisticated air. Now what is dephlogisticated air? Dephlogisticated air is essentially the air that was left here in this process. So for this, of course, what he did is a very simple thing, that when he did it in a closed sealed container. So when the mercury was heated, it was heated in a sealed container. So there was some amount of air, but not so much. Okay. So after the comparison, after it became calx, he collects the air of this, and that he calls it as a dephlogisticated air. Why? Because the phlogiston is supposed to have been left this place, and that's why he calls it a dephlogisticated air. So now the point here is that Lavoisier comes and says, he conducts the same experiment. There's no difference in the experiment. Now that is what is very important here about this particular episode. The experiment is the same. In fact, it is Priestley's idea, the Priestley's equipment, everything was the same, and Lavoisier repeats the experiment. But his interpretation is different. And you remember, we have always discussed that science is a lot to do with interpretation. And here comes the interpretation. So Priestley, Lavoisier says that he is a firm believer that if it is material, it must have mass. So he started with that kind of an ontology. he could not admit that mask would be negative, and as a result he had to see. Now if suppose if you have that kind of a beginning point, that means if you believe very strongly that there cannot be a negative mass, that any substance should have some positive mass, then what will be the conclusion here? Because its weight is more, something from the air must have got added into this and then produced this. Okay, and he calls that oxygen. So what got mixed in the process with this metal, got into this, is called oxygen. And the same thing was called by Priestley as dephlogisticated air, because of the because of his other beliefs. Now this is exactly the point about the chemical revolution. So in the chemical revolution, of course we'll see why it is a revolution a little later. So at this moment, if we actually look at this, experiments are the same, but what they have done is that their interpretations were different. Now one of the interesting things that happens here is this is resulting after mercury was heated. Which one do you think would be complex according to Levoisier?
Second.
This is complex. And this is
simple.
So there is a problem. And then what would be the substance that is getting mixed?
Simple.
So because you are getting a complex here, so there must be a possibility that this is simple, maybe this is also simple. So that is one of the things. So that's what gives him a doubt. The doubt that he gets at that point because of this experiment is that, is it really true that air and at the same time mercury, that is, and also the earth. So the what he doubts here is the earth and air, whether earth and air are actually simple, because elements are supposed to be simple. So he doubts that. Why? Because he manages to get a complex out of it, and this is more like earth, and because it's more like earth, maybe he thinks that maybe earth actually is complex, and then when you heat it, you start getting simples out of it. Then he thinks that there are more metals, there are more elements, so to speak, and then he starts believing that metal must be elemental in nature. That means it must be made of one substance rather than several substances. So then he conducts few more experiments. Now at that time, you have the steel barrel that was used for guns. So he takes one of those barrels. Okay, so what you have, because he wanted to further confirm his understanding. Of course, this is not the only experiment that he does. So he does another experiment. This experiment is entirely by Levoisier. And now what he does, he passes through it steam. So hot steam passes through this. That's all he does. He doesn't do anything other than that. And then, of course, as he notices that the inside of the barrel gets rusty, so he passes steam and the inside of the barrel becomes rusty. And then what you do, you take the weight of the barrel before and after carefully, and you will see that the barrel's weight also increases. Then what is it that you passed? This time you did not heat it. See how control, this is what is called control experiment. He is not heating this time, but he is sending steam which might contain heat anyway. Okay, and now, but you already possibly know a little bit about from where did the steam come from.
Water.
Steam comes from water. So it's basically already known that it's water vapor. Now, so if the water is getting inside, okay, and then it's coming out, and some combination is happening here, therefore what is coming out will possibly not be having some substance. Why? Because that must have gotten mixed with this thing at this place. And why he believed that is again for the same reason. One, of course, he has a strong belief that all matter must have some mass, because he did not accept the idea that there are mass with negative weight. All matter should have made of some kind of atoms, and therefore, because he is an atomist just like Newton, he's been classified as a Newtonian in the sense. So that's one of the reasons. So what is the additional fact that you get from this apart from that experiment? Can you guess what is the additional fact that you get from this? What is the additional thing? Here you are heating, okay, with air, in the presence of air. So mercury and air was there, mercury was there, and then you got earth, earth atoms. Now here what you are doing is, you got a metal again, just like mercury, you got a metal, because this metal is this barrel, and now you are mixing with the steam, and again you are getting something like a calx, because that rust is also similar to calx. It is also kind of a powder, just like calx is a powder. So now he tries to induce that the substance which got mixed with the thing must be the same, and then that must be inside water. So now water enters into the picture. That means because steam contains water, therefore water must contain that substance.
Air is there.
But you are continuously pumping steam, then in the first instance itself the air will be gushed out, right? That's very easy to replace, substitute the gasoline. So anyway, what you are producing is that you are continuously passing steam, okay, and that steam gets replaced. So therefore what he thinks is that he starts, not only earlier he doubted that earth and air are possibly complexes, now he doubts that even water is a complex, and then he does much more serious experiments and finds out that what is left after this process contains less of some substance and more of another substance, and that was already well known. What kind of today we call it hydrogen, and it was called hydrogen also by Lavoisier. Why? Because generated from water. So in this process, so we know that, but of course I think it was Cavendish who first discovered hydrogen as a, I mean, sort of isolates the lightest substance out of this whole thing, and that was much before. So in this process, what Lavoisier did,
actually, what steam is water or air, and say got that water converts into air for heating, and element converts into other
element. Right. No, but that. So, but then, so the point here is that since that steam is completely generated out of water, so it is essentially the something that is coming out of the water. So this whole idea was getting broken in the hands of Lavoisier. So it was Lavoisier who doubted. So that's why he started giving the alternative hypothesis. So though it's the same experiments, but the interpretations were different. And this experiment, which also gives an additional proof for this, and then of course he does experiments now with almost all metals, not only with steel and with mercury, he does it with all other metals that are available to him, and then finally he proposes that all metals are elements. Okay, and then he also further says, not only that all metals are elements, he also further says that water is a compound. So water becomes a compound and not an element. So now this becomes a important thing. And even at that time, he manages to also identify in what proportion of water is oxygen. So that kind of proportional combinations were also were done by the Mohsen. So he disproves that water is a element. He doubts that earth contains an element. It contains several substances. It's a mixture, and it can be eliminated. And then he also proposes that air is also a mixture and not a element. And that he does by isolating several of the gases. Of course, at that time, it was not known to him. There was this substance called fixed air. Now, fixed air, interestingly, was also Priestley's contribution. And what he does is that he takes large amount of fixed air, okay, and he puts it in a glass ball, and then he introduces plants and animals. And then animals die, plants don't die in fixed air. So from that he finds out that what is important for life, okay, should have dephlogisticated air. You remember, I don't know, possibly you may not know, that this is one of the most important experiments in biology, but they were not done by biologists, but that was done by Priestley. So Priestley was a great experimenter, despite the fact that he failed to interpret it properly. But then his interpretation with regard to respiration experiments that he did were all found to be correct. So Priestley does this experiment of, you know, putting a plant and a rat in one container and then let them live together. And sometimes with the animal and without the animal, with the plant and without the plant, he does all these control experiments. And finally he concludes that fixed air cannot be taken in breathing. That means fixed air is not a breathable air. Dephlogisticated air is breathable. So he gives all these characteristics in his studies. So dephlogisticated air is breathable. Why? Today we know, because it is oxygen. So animals need them. And fixed air is, of course, later known to be containing carbon dioxide. But then Lavoisier, of course, took fixed air as another element. So he says that there is fixed air, there is hydrogen, there is oxygen. Alright? And therefore, air must be a mixture of several gases. So he calls them, all of them, as different gases. And then water becomes a compound suddenly, and which is a combination of hydrogen and oxygen, which is also stated for the first time by Lavoisier. So Lavoisier also identifies that the two things that are there in water are actually the two gases. So he also identifies and extracts them. So this is the time when metal doesn't become an element anymore, earth doesn't become an element anymore, air doesn't become an element. So what is remaining here? Fire. So that is not his cup of tea. He still believed that, you know, fire is has some calorific value and things like that. So they are all really, they don't know the nature of fire, even at that point. So the nature of fire gets fixed much later, after advancements in thermodynamics. Of exactly what fire is and how, for example, fire is nothing but what? Motion. I mean, it was understood in terms of mechanics completely, as if it's not just nothing but the thermodynamic properties of the substances in which the things were there. So this is the story where, of course, fire is still not become a very important point. There's, if you see Lavoisier's principle of chemistry, you would see light and fire in his table of elements. So he has written a book on principles of chemistry after, of course, a lot of experiments. And in that you would see a lot of metals appear as elements. Carbon dioxide also appears as an element. in that first instance. And you will also see interesting thing, which is that light and fire were also put as elements. Because so this is also another important thing to say, that even at that period, they don't know what light and fire were. So they were all taken to be the various kinds of elements. But one thing that he has shattered is that the number of elements that we have are not five, not four. There are so many. And because even at that time they knew so many metals, so therefore they already had a large number of metallic substances. And so this is one of the important things that happened. There is one more principle that Lavoisier applies for confirming his ideas. The confirmation of this idea comes from another source, and that is also the principle that is very widely used in chemistry. And what is that? And that is that he says, since every substance should have some mass, because of that he says the products before reaction and the products after reaction must not change. That is, the mass of the products before reaction and the mass of the products after reaction should not change. And this is one of the brilliant principles that is used in all the later chemical reactions. And this is a what you call the principle of balance. So you have to balance the equation on both sides, as you say. So as you can see, if you don't balance the equation on both sides, you are basically doing not chemistry. So that principle or genesis is from Lavoisier. So Lavoisier not only shattered the earlier hypothesis, and then you can see it was believed almost in every culture. Every culture believed in this, not only the Greek culture. Arabic culture believed in it. Indian culture believed in the four elements theory. Of course, we had five elements. And even Chinese anthologies also have five elements. So five elements or four elements, these elements are common. So Lavoisier therefore actually shattered a very long lasting belief in almost all cultures, and therefore it's considered a very important revolution in that process. And then he not only gave that, he also gave experimental method and also a kind of a proof that something is an element. Now suppose when you are working with these things, as you can see here, belief in what is a complex and what is a simple is not a real problem. That is acceptable to the people even before Lavoisier as well as after Lavoisier. If you don't combine this with the principle of balance, and what is the principle of balance? The mass of the reactants as well as product should be the same. If you don't apply this principle, you won't get the modern chemistry at all. So one of the most important principle therefore is this. So in the modern chemistry, you must accept the principle of balance as the most important principle. So these are the important contributions that Lavoisier made. And he of course wrote the first textbook in chemistry called The Principle of Chemistry, where he details a lot of experiments on how to isolate gases, how to isolate metals and things like that. One important thing of course is that Lavoisier also did some mistakes. Okay, one of the mistakes that he did is the term oxygen itself. What is the reason why he got it? So why, what happened was that later on he managed to extract oxygen from almost all acids. Okay, and then he thought that oxygen essentially here means made from acids, generated from acids. So gen means to generate. So since it is generated from acid, you know, he also proposed a theory of acidity. So what is the difference between an acid and a base? So he said that presence and oxygen of oxygen is what makes it an acid and a base, which we know today is wrong. But then that was the first theory about what is an acid and what is a base, and that was also proposed by him, but it turned out to be wrong. But then we kept the name as it is. So what is in a name anyway, as the saying goes? So we kept the name as it is, but the literal meaning of oxygen is not what we know anyway. So it doesn't make much difference for us. Because many of us do not know, unless I told you that sort of example, that oxygen actually means, you know, generated from an acid, you would not know it. But then this was a mistake that he did, but otherwise Lavoisier did indeed give rise to a large number of inventions of this kind.
So, how we know that
the oxygen generated from acid is same as the reactive metal? Same oxygen
is reacting. No, come again, what is your question? Same oxygen is reacting with metal.
See, the important thing, you see, that I have not told you a lot of meticulous things that they used to do. They used to collect these gases. They used to collect these gases, and not only that, they used to collect these gases, they used to have a set of criteria on the basis of which they used to say whether this is oxygen or not. Now, what is the, if it is an oxygen, what it should do? It should support fire. So they used to introduce a burning thing, and then immediately what happens? It used to burn more eminently. That's what happens. So you would suddenly see a bigger fire. Second thing, if you put a rat in it, it will live. They did all this criteria. That means it is breathable. So it is, that is how they manage. So when a gas is extracted, let us say from an acid, that gas is again collected, and it should pass all these tests of identification, because gas is not visible. You cannot say whether it is red or white or whatever. So that is why they used to have all these criteria. So all these criteria were the ones which made them to find out whether it is carbon dioxide, whether it is hydrogen, whether it is oxygen. So these differences are based on the properties of them. So I did not get into all those details, but then even Priestley had all these details. In fact, most of the criteria that were used by Lavoisier were almost directly taken from Priestley's lab. And one of the things that you may know is that Priestley, main profession is to do chemistry, whereas for Lavoisier it's not. For Lavoisier it's a passing hobby, because he is a very rich man, and in his house he has a garage, and in that garage he converted into a chemistry lab. And during French Revolution, of course, possibly some of you know that he was brutally killed. Lavoisier was killed during French Revolution on the street. I mean, he died a immature death. Even before, I think he was 50s, he was killed during the French Revolution. Okay, so we'll take a small break and we'll come back again. But then there is one part I possibly did not tell you, is that now one thing that was clear, of course, is the conceptual change that you would see here. And we have seen that many of these things, for example, particularly these two experiments, are considered the great experiments for various reasons, because they gave the clinching proof that oxygen is an element and not a this thing. In that, of course, you have to also keep in mind the two important things. One is the theoretical assumptions that he made, and the principle that he applied, which made a lot of people to get convinced that what he was doing is correct. Now, in what sense can you say that this is an advancement? Okay, now I will leave it as an assignment for you. So this is your episode. Now, in this episode of Lavoisier and Priestley's story, you have to convince why is Lavoisier's theory, as well as whatever he did, for example, this whole process of, you know, believing in four elements and now believing in more number of elements and things like that. So why do you consider this as an advancement? So as we decided, for every episode we will be looking at conceptual change, we look at the experiments, we look at the third question, which is advancement. So in this episode, what do you consider and why do you think that there is an advancement is something that you have to think about. You may also read about, and then write this assignment. So we'll break here. and we'll come back after 10 minutes. 15 minutes. Okay. So we'll meet at 5 to 12.